Everyone, this is Matthew.
Morning, friends. I wonder, what do you want to be written on your gravestone? You've only got a few words. What matters to you? I would like it to be said that I was a friend of God. And in the Bible we find that there is a vehicle through which that friendship is possible. And it's the Bible name for that vehicle is covenant. And as we walk towards Easter in a few weeks' time, we're, as it were, looking back to that vehicle through which we are able to connect with God in friendship, to understand more deeply, so that come Easter, we can surrender more fully to Him. And just to set some context, I'm going to give 5 minutes of my time to the medium of cartoon.
Idea of having a personal relationship with God, which could mean different things in the Bible, like having God as a friend, or your father, or maybe your teacher.
But there's one particular way that the Bible talks about this relationship that you find all over. But strangely, we don't talk about it that much, and that's the idea of a partnership with God.
A partnership like working alongside someone to accomplish a goal together.
Right, and this is actually what you see at the beginning of the Bible. God creates this good world full of all of this potential. And then God appoints these unique creatures, humans, as His partners in bringing more and more goodness out of all that potential.
But the humans don't want to partner with God. They rebel and try to create a world on their own terms.
And so this broken partnership is the Bible's explanation for why we're stuck in a world of corruption and injustice and the tragedy of death.
It's not like there's just one or two humans who have bailed on this relationship. In the story of the Bible, everyone has abandoned the partnership with God.
So what God does is select a smaller group of people out of the many, and He makes a new partnership with them called a covenant. And in a covenant, God makes promises, and then in exchange asks His partner to fulfill certain commitments. And the purpose of all of this is to somehow use this covenant relationship to renew His partnership with everybody else.
Now, there are actually four times in the Old Testament that we're told God initiates a covenant relationship with Noah, Abraham, the nation of Israel, and King David.
And it's through these that God is forming a covenant family into which all people will eventually be invited.
So let's see how these work. The first one is with Noah.
So in this story, God has just brought the flood to cleanse the world of humanity's corruption, and Noah and his family are the only ones left. And so God makes a covenant with Noah, saying, "Listen, I know that humans will continue to be evil, but despite that, I'm not going to destroy it like this again. Instead, the earth will be this reliable place for us to work together."
Great. So what does Noah have to do?
Nothing. And that's what's so interesting about this first covenant, is that God is promising to be faithful, even though He knows humans won't be.
The next time we see God make a covenant is with a man named Abraham. God chooses him, promises to bless him, give him a large family, lots of land where they can flourish.
And in return, God asks Abraham to trust him and train up his family to do what is right and just. And the whole reason for this covenant is God says that somehow He's going to bring His blessing to all families of the world through this one family.
So that's Abraham. The next time we see God make a covenant is when Abraham's family grows into the tribe of Israel.
And this covenant is with the whole tribe. God asks them to obey a set of laws, which are these guidelines for living well as a community of God's partners. And if they do this, then God promises to bless them and that they will become a people who then represent Him to the rest of humanity.
That's the covenant with Israel. The last covenant is with King David.
Yeah, the tribe of Israel has become this large nation, ruled by David. And God asks David and his descendants to partner with him by leading Israel in obeying the laws and doing what is right and just. And God promises that one day, one of David's sons will come and extend God's kingdom of peace and blessing over all the nations.
So those are the four covenants that God makes in order to restore His partnership with the whole world.
But here's what happens. Israel breaks the covenant. They worship other gods, they allow horrible injustice, and so they lose their land and are forced off into exile.
So it seems hopeless. But during this time, Israel's prophets talked about a day when God would restore these covenants in spite of Israel's failure, somehow.
Yeah, they called it the New Covenant. And this is actually what's so interesting about Jesus, is that he's introduced into this story as the one who fulfills all of these covenant relationships. We're told that he's from the family of Abraham, and so he will bring the blessings of that family to the whole world. We're told that he's the faithful Israelite who was able to truly obey the law. And we're told that he's the king from the line of David, and so he goes about extending God's kingdom of justice and peace to all.
And that's really remarkable for one guy.
Yeah, and what it highlights is perhaps the most surprising claim of all made about this man, that Jesus is no mere human, but rather God become human. And God did this in order to be that faithful covenant partner that we are all made to be, but have failed to be. And so through Jesus, God has opened up a way for anyone to be in a renewed partnership with him.
So Jesus calls people to follow him and become part of this new covenant family.
And despite their failures, Jesus is committed to making them into partners who are becoming more and more faithful.
The story of the Bible ends with a vision of a fully renewed world, full of goodness and peace.
And there's this renewed humanity there, partnering together with God to expand the goodness of his creation. And so the end of the Bible story is really a new beginning. Hey, this is Tim.
And this is John.
We think what...
All right. So helpfully represented behind me are the expanding covenants of the Bible, starting with Noah, a promise not to flood the earth, then to a family, to a nation with Moses, and to David, where an eternal kingdom which will grow and expand to include you. But we're going to start back here and consider what actually was a covenant. What were the mechanics of it? What did it look like? What was it? So if I was, for example, to decide that I wanted to enter into a covenant with Alistair's tribe, we wanted to become one tribe, what would the component parts of what we do be? Well, there were a few. There would commonly be an animal sacrifice of some kind. There would almost always be a covenant scar made by each party so that there's a permanent reminder of that oneness. There would often be a robe given to confer the identity of a new family to each party. There would often be an exchange of weapons to signify that I'm now going to come to Alistair's aid and he to mine. There would often be a change of name, again, to demonstrate and signify that our identity has changed. There would be promises and consequences for keeping the covenant. And last, there would very often be a meal together to demonstrate, to signify that we are now not two but one. And so if you want to turn to Genesis 15, I want you to have those things in mind as we enter into the world of Abraham, or Abram actually at this point. I'm not going to read all of it, but I'm going to read some. Sorry, I've got the NIV. So here's Abraham. He's being called by God out of his home into a future land. And we've got this. After this, the word of the Lord came to Abraham in a vision. Don't be afraid, Abraham. I'm your shield, your very great reward. Verse 2, but Abraham said, Sovereign Lord, what can you give me since I remain childless and the one who will inherit my estate is Eliezer of Damascus? And Abraham said, you give me no children, so a servant in my household will be my heir. Then the word of the Lord came to him, this man will not be your heir, but a son who's your own flesh and blood will be your heir. He took him outside and said, look up to the sky and count the stars, if indeed you can count them. Then he said, so shall your offspring be. Abraham believed the Lord, and he credited it to him as righteousness. He also said to him, I'm the Lord who brought you out of Ur of the Chaldeans to give you this land and take possession of it. But Abraham said, Sovereign Lord, how can I know? I wonder if any of you have ever asked God that question. Of course you have. How can I know? How can I know that what you said is true? How can I know that you'll follow through on your promises? How can I know that my hopes aren't in vain? How can I know that I will gain possession of it? And the Lord's answer is, bring me a heifer. Who finds that reassuring? I promise you, Abraham did. Because he understands in that moment that this God is not one of the pantheon of gods of his age. He's different. Because this God extraordinarily is about to choose to enter into a permanent covenant with people. So Abraham, I don't know what he did. He must have danced a jig. Because he understood what bring me a heifer meant. It meant that God was forever tying himself to people. So here's what happened. Abraham collects various animals as instructed, cut them in two, and we have a helpful aisle here, if you can imagine this. He lays the halves out, one on that side, one on that side. As the sun was setting, it says, this is verse 12, Abraham fell into a deep sleep, and a thick and dreadful darkness came over him. Then the Lord said, know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in a country not their own, prophesying the exile, and that God will bring them out. I'm obviously paraphrasing. When the sun had set, verse 17, and darkness had fallen, a smoking firepot with a blazing torch appeared and passed between the pieces. On that day, the Lord made a covenant with Abraham and said, to your descendants, I give this land. A little while ago, Livingstone, who you've probably heard of, was a missionary in Africa. And those who'd sent him became concerned about his well-being. So they sent a chap called Stanley, of whom, again, you may have heard, to find him. And Stanley's search party encountered quite a few difficulties in their travels. Disease, they were hungry, the environment was pretty hostile. And they, on one occasion, encountered a tribe that were pretty hostile and that weren't going to let them pass. And Stanley's interpreter advised him to cut a covenant with the tribe. So not knowing what else to do, Stanley agreed. Negotiations happened and were agreed upon, and a ceremony began between the two parties. There was a representative from each group, and the two representatives went through the blood covenant rite. Blood was drawn from the wrist of each, mingled with wine and drunk. Gunpowder was rubbed in the scars so that they would become permanent. To seal the agreement, Stanley and the chief exchanged gifts. The chief got his goat, from which he was getting milk, and Stanley received a spear. Now, he thought initially that was a pretty bad deal. He had a bad stomach. The milk was helpful. What's he going to do with the spear? He soon found out that as he journeyed through Africa and other tribes who might have been hostile saw the chief's spear in his hand and the covenant mark, they knew that Stanley was in covenant with the most powerful tribe in the land. And they knew that if they attacked him or refused him passage, they would not only have to fight Stanley, but also the tribe in covenant with him. So they bowed and let him pass. He reportedly used the covenant rite 50 times on his travels. And I don't know if that rings any bells, but I don't know. Do you remember the story of David? He, as a teenage shepherd boy, long before God made a covenant with him, he was sent by his mum with some cheese sandwiches to the battle lines for his brothers who were hungry. And when he arrived at the battle, he found the Israelite troops in a line and an enormous Philistine taunting them. And he was somewhat surprised to find this going on. He expected a bit more action. And he started asking around to find out what was going on. And he asked a critical question. I don't know if you remember the question that he asks. He says this, who is this uncircumcised Philistine to defy the armies of the living God. In other words, have you forgotten who we're with and who is with us? Have you forgotten that we are the covenant people of God? He's uncircumcised. What's he got? David understood the reality of a covenant, a promised relationship with God that was unbreakable. And I haven't got time to go through too much, but that is the critical and key factor in the heroes of the Old Testament, that they understood that they're in covenant with God, that this is not at question. And so Gideon goes to war with 300 people, which is absurd. And so Elisha sees armies of angels where others don't. And so Mordecai and Esther, he says to Esther, understand that even if you don't step up, someone else will. How do you know that? Because he knows that God won't abandon Israel, because he knows that they're a covenant people. And so David himself, as he journeys through life, is chased by the king and betrayed by his own son. But he sticks it out because he understands the history of covenant, and he understands that God will not let them go. So understanding that reality, that God himself has entered into covenant with them, is absolutely critical to all of the heroes of the Old Testament, because they just know that he won't let them go. And in fact, if you think about Caleb, the 2 and the 10, maybe it's those that really got hold of the reality of the covenant that turned out to be in the pages of the Bible, and those that forgot ended up wandering the desert or coming back with reports of giants that we can't take out. Well, what's it got to do with you and I? Well, as we sort of step from David through to Easter, then we remember the realities that we inherit, if you like, or take hold of from this history of covenant. So we remember that, like the prodigal son, where the father says, bring the best robe and put it on him, that we're robed in white, Revelation says, and we're able to stand before the throne. Remember, as Paul says, that we're given a sword of truth and a shield of faith, to remember, Isaiah 58, that the glory of the Lord's our rear guard, that he's our protector. We remember that the infilling of the Spirit means that our hearts are circumcised, Paul says. We remember that in Revelation, Jesus promises that you have a new name that only he and you will know. And we celebrate, of course, a covenant meal, to which everyone, without any exception, is invited. And supremely, we celebrate and remember an unblemished lamb who was cut open, and through whose blood we walk into an everlasting and eternal and unbreakable friendship with God. And so the deeper we dig into this history, then the more we find ourselves, come bread and wine, breaking ourselves open in return and entering more deeply into that friendship. We've got tons of time to respond, which is nice, isn't it? But why don't you stand with me? Because I want to extend an invitation. Which I can't currently find. Now, Isaiah prophesied between David and Jesus. So he was looking back at the covenants of his people, and he was looking forward, like no other prophet really, to the new covenant with Jesus. And we're going to sing again, but this is the invitation of Isaiah, looking back and looking forward to you. Come, all you who are thirsty, come to the waters. And you who have no money, come buy and eat. Come buy wine and milk without money and without cost. Why spend money on what's not bread, and your labor on what does not satisfy? Listen, listen to me, and eat what is good, and you'll delight in the richest of fare. Give ear and come to me, listen, that you may live. I will make an everlasting covenant with you. My faithful love promised to David.